My guest today is Dr. Lee Jampolsky. Lee is a recognized leader in psychology. He served as a trained psychologist on the medical staff and faculty of respected hospitals and graduate schools throughout the United States. He has also contributed to the personal and spiritual growth of countless individuals internationally, including corporate consultations with management and CEOs of businesses of all sizes. He's the author of seven books. Seven. Smile for No Good Reason, Healing the Addictive Personality, Walking Through Walls, The Art of Trust. Oh, this next one is a really good one and strongly recommend for anyone, parent and child who are disconnected. The book is called Listen to Me, Healing Father-Son Relationships. It's just an amazing book. Healing Together, Going from Crisis to Calm During Turbulent Times, and Healing the Addictive Mind. He's currently working on a novel soon to be released. Lee's books have sold hundreds of thousands of copies around the world and have been published in more than a dozen languages. He's been interviewed and quoted many times by Wall Street Journal, Los Angeles Times, and others. To learn more about Lee's work, please visit his website at www.drleejampolsky.com. I knew Lee's dad, Dr. Jerry Jampolsky, through my spirit mother, as I love to call her, Judy Whitson Scutch, who introduced us recently via email. Lee and I met virtually, and I immediately became aware of his great spirit, his passion for teaching how to remove the blocks to the awareness of love's constant presence in our lives is evident. It became evident that we both, through our respective teaching circumstances, teach what we want to learn. Like me, Lee introduces himself as a fellow learner. That also piqued my attention. How precious to come across another enthusiastic student of A Course in Miracles, who wakes up every morning happy to remind himself that he's here to learn and to the best of his ability, surrender to the holy instant and give his higher self the power to lead in all his seeming doings of a body while he appears to be here. So join us today as we talk about health as a state of mind and how when the mind no longer sees itself forever in bondage to the body, the mind can be free and at peace even when we're physically sick and may remain so for the rest of our lives. During this podcast, Lee and I talk about the importance of taking the time to remember our true nature, which is love, and not let one day pass without doing this. Join us as we naturally open to and step into the power of presence, the holy instant, and let it shine its healing light upon us. Welcome. Well, today I have the wonderful opportunity of talking to Lee Jampolsky and talking about his extraordinary life. And I'm so delighted to have this firsthand opportunity to learn from you. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you. It's a co-learning opportunity for me as well. So thank you very much.
Thank you. So Lee, you know, the inspiration behind this podcast came from the fact that, you know, I spend a lot of time with cancer patients and we talk a lot about the body, the limitations of the body, our identity with the body, and how difficult it can be for people when the body does what the body does. And that means it decrepits and it starts impeding us from being in the world the way we thought we ought to be in the world. And so I want to start our conversation by first asking you if you've had any experience with cancer or body illness. Yeah, just tell me a little bit about that first and then how the course, A Course in Miracles, has helped you look at some of those challenges, help you reframe things, or help you change your mind.
Well, I'll start with a summation statement, I guess, about answering your question. And as a human being, like most human beings, I've had fear in my consciousness about illness, pain, impending death. Mm-hmm. And A Course in Miracles has helped me realize that I'm not that body that is experiencing those things, and that I have a consciousness that is above and beyond that. We want to describe things in oftentimes in terms of separate from, but it's really not separate from it. It's a consciousness that's based in the reality of love. Now, to some listeners, and that would seem like a whole bunch of words that doesn't mean much. So now let me talk about really sort of the my personal experience and going along with that. Some people look at me, and because I try and stay fit, I eat healthy, and they might make the assumption that I've always been very healthy, and that's not the case. I struggled both with emotional pain as well as physical pain and loss. Mm. And I'll give you, and it's been ongoing and cyclical in many ways. And to me, every time something has come up, it's been another opportunity to learn more deeply. And I'll give you an example of just one of those, maybe one or two of them. If you would ask, I'm now, how old am I? I just had a birthday. So I'm 64 years old.
What is age, anyway?
Right. People that aren't that old don't say that. But yes, I agree. when I was in my mid-30s, about 30 years ago now, if you had asked me the question, how's life going, Lee? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. My response would have been outrageously well. I am a psychologist directing a hospital program for a top hospital. I'm married, and it's the... I knew my wife since she's a teenager. I have two beautiful children. I live in one of the most beautiful parts of the world. What couldn't be better?
Bliss.
And if you had said to me at that same time, well, thank you for that, Lee. But some people, they, even though they're living what they think their dream might be, there might be something that they would really like to do. What aren't you doing, or what's missing? And if I was really honest with you, I would have said, well, I'm kind of following in a workaholic's footsteps. Both of my parents were workaholic. I leave early and I come back late, and I'm just not seeing my kids as much as I would like. They're 3 and 1 year old. And, as much as I love seeing patients and doing things, I've always loved to write, and I would like to reach more people through the written word and to enjoy that. And if you'd said to me, well, why don't go ahead and do that? That sounds great. I would have had a big, long list of reasons why I couldn't do that, ranging from money to responsibility to lots of patients and family and, all the usual obligations. Well, something interesting happened. In a matter of a few months, all of the things that I described that I attributed my happiness to, and also attributed my identity to, that health, great job, good marriage, all of those things, within a matter of months, they were all gone.
What an awakening.
I woke up one day and I couldn't hear anymore. Had very, very little hearing left. Wow. And turned out I had autoimmune disease that had taken my hearing. because of that loss of hearing, I could no longer work as a psychologist. A psychologist's ears are kind of like a piano player's hands, you know, or ears, or carpenter, or whatever.
But like a runner without shoes.
Yes. Running. And so that was quite devastating, along with the health challenge. And the treatment for a lot of this was some chemotherapy and different aspects. And so I was sick on top of it. And about that same time, my wife had some other things that were going on, and that led to the loss of our marriage. So all of a sudden, I all of those things that I thought were bringing me happiness and meaning, and that I sort of hung my hat on in terms of my identity, were gone. Now, it didn't happen overnight, but guess what life emerged? The secret one that I really wanted.
Closing a door and opening a window.
I was able to be at home full time with my kids. I started to write. Lo and behold, I did pretty well with it. Was able to reach other people, make a living. Though the marriage didn't come back, my wife and I are to this day truly best friends, and raised our kids together, and healed that relationship. And the curious thing was that there truly was, we give a lot of lip service to, there's oftentimes a silver lining in our loss or things, but you know what? There really, really is. And it's not always as pronounced, perhaps, as mine, but if I were to summate the one thing that I haven't said that occurred and happened from then to now, is the real gift of being deaf. Mm-hmm. The real gift of being deaf is I've learned how to listen with something beyond my ears.
Wow. Well, I'm going to interject a little bit here and tell everyone that the first time you and I met, and
sure, please do.
We were having a conversation on Zoom, and we're just coming to get to know each other, really. And I interrupted by a phone call from my daughter, who is telling me that her cat, whom she loved dearly, is about to pass. And she's very distraught. I'm with her on the phone. Of course, you can't hear the melody, the prosodic aspect of my speech, which is really the melody behind the words, is what helps us, God, what carries emotion that we decode ever so well. So you can't hear that. Just stay with me for a second, Lee, because ever since we had that exchange, I just can't stop thinking about it. So I'm on the phone with my daughter. You can't hear the voice. You might be able to read my lips, but you can't hear my voice, my melody. And I'm very musical too. So I carry my emotions really up my sleeve. It's very easy to know how I feel. I'm on the phone with her. I get off the phone with her. And you made a comment that, you know, you could spend years with me telling me about who you are, but just that instance of you being on the phone with your daughter has told me everything that I needed to know about you. So, you know, you heard me, not the hair, not the skin, but the spirit that lives within us, Rumi says. So I thought to myself, when I spoke, you must have not listened to the words, but you must have listened to the silence. And I put a capital S on that, because that's where there's all of me. silence is not the absence of sound, but the absence of the small s self, the ego created self, the self that I make with those identities. I am my family, I'm a psychologist. I have such and such house. I have a beautiful wife. I have a beautiful husband. I have those two beautiful kids. And that's the self that I make. I mean, who am I without that? And ever since you and I had that exchange, I can't stop thinking about that. I can't stop thinking about, like you said in your book, in your book where you say how to say yes when your body says no, you quote Dr. Rachel Naomi Raymond that says healing may not be so much about getting better physically as about letting go of everything that isn't you, all of the expectations, all of the beliefs, and becoming who you truly are.
Exactly. And that's so, so well put. And the most of us, and the world supports this, is we're big achievers. We think success is about what we can, you know, talk about or put on a resume. And I've learned, and you asked early on about, you know, the Course of Miracles. Mm-hmm. For me, the main teaching for me is I've learned how to love more. You know, so for me, it's really, truly, you mentioned, you know, listen, I do call it listening, even though I may not be doing it with my human ear. The love has a presence. And even when we are sick or struggling with cancer or have some sort of a loss going on, if we listen and turn to really hearing our heart, the person that we're concerned about, their heart, the person who may be taking care of us, a doctor, a nurse, to feel their heart, something amazing and miraculous happens. When we are doing that, we do not experience the same level of pain and discomfort and fear. The two are really mutually exclusive. Very difficult to be loving and fearful at the exact same moment in time.
Yeah, in fact, the Course says you can't be in both states of mind. You're either in love or the departure from love. Mm.
You know, that as you and I are both psychologists, and we know how the multitude of courses and books that are offered and given, many valuable and good, about communication and listening skills and speaking skills, and not to make small of any of that. It's very valuable information. But for me, oftentimes in my life, especially on my spiritual path, I do my best to make it simple. I'm kind of at heart, I like simple. And for me, taking some of A Course in Miracles, or really truly any spiritual path, and I believe that there's really only two forms of communication. That's it. Only two. Now, if that's true, which I think it is, that makes it fairly straightforward and simple. And those two forms of communication are that we are either making a call for love, or we are expressing love. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yeah. Two states.
Now, some people may go, well, wait, that doesn't make sense. I mean, the thing is that calls for love are usually not pretty. Typically, people don't come up and go, you know, I'm a little kind of low today, Gabriella. How about a hug? I could really use a little love. You know, regardless of what it may look like or how we may feel or how angry somebody else is or how sad they are or how much loss they're in, that really these two aspects of communication are either that somebody's making a call for love or somebody's expressing love. when we see that, we can see that the calls for love are really oftentimes not very pretty, and that somebody can be upset with us or, you know, angry or something like that, or fearful and all of that. And rather than responding to that level, if we are able to respond with some kindness and compassion and understanding, things begin to change. And the bulk of what I was really saying, and this is something that I'll give an example of in a minute, that my dad in attitudinal healing groups discovered very well, that when people are actively giving, actively expressing love, actively being kind, actively being present, actively offering help, they, in that moment, do not experience the level of pain and discomfort and loss that they do when they are preoccupied with that loss, preoccupied with the pain, all of that. So the more we can be in that, those moments. And where he found that was, he started his career with attitudinal healing with doing groups and working with kids with catastrophic illnesses. So he had these groups of kids, you know, some of them with bald head from chemo, some in wheelchairs, all these different things. And what he began to notice is when one of these kids might come in sort of hunched over and in pain, but when they see another kid wheel in and they're there for the first time and they're very fearful, and that kid is reaching out to this new kid saying, you know, you're really going to, things are okay and we're going to be here. You see that kid straighten up. You see that they're not experiencing the level of pain they were because they're actively giving to another human being. And if you think about it, it is so true and so applicable for us all.
Yes, indeed. You made me think of this whole process that you must have gone through, because now suddenly you are having to make a choice, an internal choice, as to how do you perceive the people around you? What do you listen to? Do you listen to the words, or do you listen to this now newly found process through which you really have access to all of them? Because for the most part, we go in and out of our higher self. We are intermittently there. And most of the time, we're less there than we are in our ego mind.
It's certainly what we're used to, language. Imagine for a moment, if you will, that you've lived this life that you've lived. And I have these secret headphones here and these secret glasses here. And when you put those on, you are going to hear beauty that you have never experienced before. You're going to hear a music that you could only imagine. You're going to see in other people a light that you can't believe you couldn't see with your body's eyes before. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying that I'm always there. I'm not. I experience loss and things like that. I've experienced quite a lot of loss in this last year, and it sometimes is very difficult for me still. But much of the time also, I have those headphones on and those glasses. That it once you begin to feel love and see love and pause long enough to sense it. Even when I close my eyes right now, I am in this moment, but I'm also aware that time is an illusion, and I'm also in a future moment where I am sharing this moment with somebody who's listening to my words on this Zoom meeting far in the future. And I'm imagining their life, and I'm listening to their pain, and I'm extending love to them. And I know in my heart that I'm reaching them, and that they oddly feel this person is seeing me, even though I'm not even in the same time frame as they are. How is that possible? Well, it's because we are all connected. We are all connected. We are all one. This sense of time that we think is so important is an illusion. This sense of language that we think is so important has a certain amount of beauty to it, but it also has an incredible amount of limitation to it. Mm-hmm. We fight and we argue and we prove and we want to be right, and we use these words all the time to do that. There's a life and an existence beyond all of this, beyond the body, beyond the pain, beyond all of the conflict that we may be having with somebody. And if we turn our attention to it, it's there. And the more we do it, the more it's there. The more we listen to it, the more we hear. I'm living proof of that, although, and again, I'm not suggesting that I'm immune to pain or conflict or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But life is different now. It really is.
You know, the Course says that pain comes from our identification with something that we're not. Identification.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Identification with this body and its bodily function. And while you were talking, I was just imagining, what would it be like for people going through cancer right now to suggest to their loved ones and people that really mean a lot to them and to whom perhaps they can't quite connect because of words, to suggest moments of silence, to suggest sitting in a room and just gently loving each other and sending love to each other and seeing the commonality of us all, that common denominator. Because differences are only of the body. Differences are only those that we project. There are no differences. And to stay in that realm, to make a conscious decision to stay there, like you were saying, I'm, you know, making one with all there is, although there is no time, past, present, and future, and taking rest in that abandoning of differences and celebration of our pure spirit, which is love, it's phenomenal.
It absolutely is. And it requires sometimes getting over our own self-imposed limitations of, I can't, it's impossible. All of these words and the things that we tell ourselves about, especially when we're struggling with something physical or a life-threatening situation. And what if we do exactly as you are suggesting? That we spend a little bit more time in the pauses of life, in the silent portions of it, that we do our very best not to only put ourselves in the path of fear. When there's something wrong with our body, I mean, you know this, you work with patients all of the time. It's a river, a raging river of fear that's going on. Mm-hmm. And one of the things oftentimes, the two big things that I find in working with people, that the two largest fears, they're not the only fears, but the two largest fears are of pain and suffering and of death. Pain is a very interesting, interesting thing, as is suffering, that it's a very basis. And if you're having some pain and I tell you, let's say, you know, you're going in for something and I say, you know, this is only going to hurt for, you know, about 30 seconds and then it will go over. And if I were to say, I'm sorry, but this is going to hurt for about 3 years. Mm-hmm. Okay. What's your experience? Okay. Well, the 30 seconds, it doesn't seem like that big of a deal. The multiple years seems like a pretty big deal, but we're still here now and in this moment. If we deal with our discomforts and our pains in life, really from a present place, we don't resist that much. Okay? The level of suffering is less. We tend to call in our culture, put pain and suffering together. They're somehow linked together. Okay? And yet oftentimes, all the time, it's the level that we resist the pain or kind of this shouldn't be happening, I got to stop it, it couldn't be. That actually causes the suffering. The relaxing into it more and the, okay, this is happening right now, it reduces the amount of suffering. So the suffering does not have to come from pain. We can overcome that quite a bit. Mm-hmm. Again, going back to attitude, no healing in A Course in Miracles, it's about bringing ourselves to the present moment, making a choice to do something different, like giving, yeah, like forgiving, that we find a sense of peace of mind.
Mm-hmm. In your book,
attitudinal healing describes, when most people hear the word health, they immediately think of body. Immediately. Okay. Maybe once in a while, a psychologist, we think of mental health. But even beyond that, few people think of health as a state of inner peace.
Mm.
And I suggest that we think of health as a state of inner peace.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful definition of health. That is what the Course also see health to be, a change in mind.
Yeah, and attitudinal healing as well.
Yeah, an abandoning of identification with the body. And so you've done a lot of work around this concept that your father put forward, attitudinal healing. Tell us a little bit about that. Are you still involved in that work?
I consider myself a good supporter and advocate of attitudinal healing. There's people on the ground who do much more of the work globally than I do. I've written a book and several articles on it. Actually, I'll get sort of personal for a moment about it. So my father was a remarkable man, still is in my, he died just last December. So it's a transition for me. He was really my best friend. But the man who raised me was 180 degrees from the man that lives today. The man who raised me was a self-described militant atheist alcoholic. He would describe himself as that way back then. Very controlling, very workaholic, and highly critical. And that's the father in the home that I was raised in. He and my mother divorced when I was a sophomore in high school. So about 2 or 3 years later, I didn't like him very much at that point, frankly. I was kind of, like many young men in a similar situation. So a few years later, he had this amazing spiritual awakening. He began to write books and got very well known on 60 Minutes and all the Phil Donahue, all these talk shows, and people were like, "Oh, you're Jerry Jampolsky." So that would have been at that point when I was 19, 18 years old. So they're like nails on a blackboard. it was just very, it's like I wanted to be my own man. I wanted to, you know, and I didn't want to, you know, nobody knew him really, you know, all of that big chip, you know, my chip on my shoulder was about yay high. And over time, I developed what I called a good enough relationship with them. I'm sharing this because we have many relationships like this in life. And the good enough relationship was, well, you know, we could be in the same room and I didn't want to bite his head off, okay? And so I liked where it was. I didn't want to rock the boat. I was now in my late 20s, early 30s. I was, you know, going on my own career. In my first book, which was a bestseller, Healing the Addictive Mind, on my own struggles with addiction and recovery. Though I've written about 10 books, now people think that I always write on what I'm an expert on, and that's not true. I write on what I am guided to learn about. And so it's always a growthful process for me. And how I find that process is I go inside and I ask. We can call that our higher self or intuition, higher power, God, whatever you want. But after my second book, I was asking, well, what should I write on next? And the answer surprised me greatly. It was, you need to write a book with your father on healing your relationship. And I was like, what? The answer from my own inner guidance was, you want to be the best father you can be to your daughters. You need to heal your relationship with your father or you won't be. So that was my primary motivation, because I was still carrying unforgiveness, which manifested in negative ways. So I wrote my dad a letter. This was before email and all that stuff. And inviting him to engage with me in however we would see this happen. And we spent a few years meeting with each other, going on retreats, writing letters, meeting with therapists, all to move through this healing that I needed to do, but also he needed to do. And through that process, there was a whole lot of letters. I'm gonna pull something down here. And this was very long time ago. I don't know if you can see it. That's
happy you're
and me as a young man. And that book mostly has the letters in it that he and I wrote to each other through those years about healing our relationship. And it changed my life. Because I think when we decide that we need to get to forgiveness and we need to heal within ourselves, whether the person's alive or not, a lot of times we did workshops around the country for people about helping them heal the relationship, and people would come, well, my parent is dead, or my kid won't even talk to me. I can't possibly do this. It doesn't take, it's nice when there's two, but it's not necessary,
right? Yeah. So what was that like for you, Lee? What was that like to meet Dad, to be able to look in his eyes, to say, I don't understand. I see the past. I see this specific instance of the past, Dad. And it hurts me. Is there another way to look at it? How would you look at it, Dad? Or can we look at it together differently? What was that like for you? And would you recommend to people that if they can, to revisit relationships in their mind, whether or not the person is present, like you're saying, and try to come to terms in terms of what happened. Perhaps, as the course suggests, try to engage in the process of forgiveness, where you actually take the incident to Holy Spirit, to your higher mind, and allow it to look at it with a true vision rather than our interpretations here, and allow forgiveness to come in.
What it was like for me was different at different times. Mm-hmm. At first, there were many times when I wanted to hold on to my version of the story. I wanted to remain the victim, and I wanted to make him wrong. Wow. And I wanted him to apologize and all of those different things. And slowly, I was able to shift my focus to not wanting to hold on to my story anymore. Mm-hmm. We all have stories of pain. He's perfect. I don't know about you, but most people I know would be in some really poor ways, and that we're not proud of. So it's that decision that there's a larger story here. And this dovetails into what we were talking about before, because the real story isn't in what happened. Mm-hmm. The real story is not in the words that were spoken.
Yes, Lee. Yeah.
The story that I wanted to write was one of forgiveness, one of here, one of now, one of being able to have tenderness and compassion in my heart for somebody who I originally thought did me wrong. Okay. And what was that like? I became a man. I became a human being. I grew. I blossomed. My pain didn't hold me back anymore because it wasn't there anymore. Mm. What was in its place? Love, caring, tenderness.
The holiest place on earth.
No, I feel his presence here right now with me. Mm-hmm. Sharing love and knowing that's the truth.
And that we can never be apart. It's incredible what happens when we remove the blocks to love's constant presence in our lives. It's there all the time, Lee, isn't it? Like a
absolutely.
It never stops beating. All we have to do is just get ourselves out of the way.
Yes. You asked me earlier about, kind of my hearing loss, what it's like when I don't hear people, First, there was a lot of situations that I avoided, and being an introvert at heart, it kind of followed with what I do anyway. But anything with large group, like a dinner or, a party or a banquet or, things like that, I have no idea what's in terms of on the level of language and people talking to each other. So I always felt out of it and awkward and, what if somebody, so I stopped going, basically. And then it occurred to me that what if I was involved in the same way and I didn't pay attention to what I couldn't hear and focused on what I could. And that meant this, what you're describing of everybody in that room or everybody at this table or everybody, I can be listening to their call for love and I can be extending that to them. And the amazing thing was, is I felt really great when I did that. I felt, because as giving and receiving are one in truth. So what used to be going, thinking about my hearing, my ears, I would go and think of what I could do and did have, which is love, and abundance came, and I would leave much happier than I came. Sometimes things are still awkward with it, especially now that we have, I'm out for a captioner. I have So how I have you set up here, I have one screen and then a screen in the back, and that has captions on it. So I'm sort of reading your lips, but I'm also looking at the captions. So the two fell in. Well, with masks that everybody, you know, we're in that situation
right,
now.
Right.
You know, it. I can't see their mouth, and the sound is muffled, so my captioning app doesn't work very well. So it's kind of back to that, you know, really being kind of the second skill set with language that I developed is not there right now. So, you know, when I'm out in public, but I really do believe that we have this opportunity, no matter what's happening, no matter what's happening with our body or our life or our relationships, to just stop, pause, take some breaths, and become aware where you are, what you're feeling, let that flow, and be slowly begin to feel the tenderness and compassion for yourself and for another human being. And it's a very, very powerful and peaceful way to live.
Lee, to me, you're a living testimony to what it means, what the Course means when the Course says, when we have healed our mind, we are healed. It doesn't matter if for the rest of our lives, say, you know, the cancer might still be there and the body may experience some illness or another. It doesn't matter, because you're leaving with a healed mind, and that's leaving.
Absolutely. So beautifully said. And that dovetails nicely with what something you said earlier about our identity, mm-hmm. that we human beings become very attached to this thing that we call I.
Yes.
That all of the things that we think who this I is, you know, you were saying before, you know, wife, a psychologist, a worker, all this stuff.
Yeah.
Long time ago, you may recall him. There was a psychologist by the name, an Italian guy named Roberto Assagioli, and he came up with something called psychosynthesis, which kind of went a little wrong in modern times, but the original work was really quite good. And one of the things that he does in there is he talks a great deal about the, he doesn't put it this way, but I consider it an art, the art of loosening the things that we attach our identity to. And he developed this process that I use to this day called identification, disidentification. And how it goes is you look at these multitude of things, like, you know, I'm a dad, I'm a psychologist, I'm a man, I have my health, I'm a sexual being, I'm all these different things. And to be able to say, I have a body, that's the identification part, but I'm not my body.
Mm-hmm.
That's the disidentification part. And as we go through almost on a daily basis to really look at these different aspects, it really sort of teaches us how to be in the present moment without, most of us live in a precarious, just a multitude of loss can happen at any, we're so attached to so many things.
Yes.
If we loosen those attachments and we loosen, then we become kind of bulletproof, really, to, you know, as we're going through life in terms of a lot of the lost things. And some things are harder than others. You know, you work with a lot of prostate patients. I shared before, I have had two prostate surgeries now. And there's all sorts of things that, you know, it's the same thing for different aspects of for women, for example, if they have a mastectomy or different things that, you know, our culture thinks of as our identity as a woman or our identity as a man, or, And, you know, in my second prostate surgery, particularly, it was, you know, am I going to lose my sexual function? And am I going to, you know, all the different things. And this practice of identification, disidentification over time was very helpful with that. So I didn't have to, you know, I have all of those things, but I'm not those things. You can take them away. And the core of who I am is not
touched,
you know, not
by
gone.
It's not gone. Such great advice, especially for people undergoing, you know, cancer diagnosis and then going through treatment and what have you, to repeat, to go through this process of, like you said, identification and then de-identification. And the course does this so well, especially in the beginning lessons when it tells you, like you said, you have a body.
Exactly. It's beautiful. Both. That's what it's doing.
But you are not.
Lamp all the meaning it has for
that
me.
It has
know, all
me.
Of these
exactly.
different steps. It's
thoughts
it's
you have are not
meaning our mind.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's interesting because the thoughts we have are not our real thoughts. So then choose your real thoughts. Choose love, like you said. Take that breath. Allow kindness to surface. Kindness for yourself and appreciation for yourself, appreciation for the other. I can choose that. And especially during the cancer journey. I mean, one thing that I hear you say and is surfacing so powerfully for me, and I think it's a message, such a powerful message, it could be potentially for our listeners as well, this idea of silence. Bringing some silence in our day-to-day exchanges with people. What if we took a leap of faith and said, when we are interacting with the person that we interact with, we are going to make a conscious decision to let silence come in.
To go into that silence with the openness that we normally don't have, to allow ourselves to, I like to, it may sound a little corny, but I like to have like apps on our phones that say how much screen time you've had today, you know, oftentimes, obviously, is a crazy amount for many people. But what I like to think about and consider and direct my mind to is how much love time am I having today? How much tenderness time am I having today? How much kindness time am I having today? And then to make a decision to come, and the reason why sometimes the silence, as you say, is important, or even if it's a pause, just a brief pause, is it can be the open door to where we make a different choice, where we choose love instead of fear, where we choose a moment of kindness instead of listening to somebody's story and judging them or whatever it might be. So silence in itself, people may go, well, what's it for? I like to think of silence as the doorway to more love time. It's where we can reroute in a way and come out differently on the other side, even if it's a brief pause, even if it's a breath.
What a lovely metric to live by, Lee. What a lovely metric. Where the metric is, how much happiness am I experiencing today? How much kindness, how much compassion, how much generosity, how much vulnerability.
Where's the most vulnerable place is in this present moment. But then again, in a beautiful way, I used to do a lot of lecturing. I don't do so much anymore right now by choice, but I remember I used to kind of ask people, imagine that I put on a board behind me, you know, like three columns. Hmm. One column is the past, one column is the future, and one column is now. And I want you to basically look at your life, kind of this idea of screen time, of how much time in your conscious, in your thoughts, are you in the past? How much time are you, which the past would have to do with things like guilt, resentments, I wish I'd done it different, why'd they do that to me, I got screwed, I'm so angry at that person, all those, that stuff.
Do such and such, yeah, exactly.
You know, replaying stories, right?
Oh, we're great at that. We see the
how much time are you in the future, mm-hmm. which is all about worry, all about projection, all about setting goals, all about whatever, positive, negative, everything in the future. And how much time are you in the now, right now? Well, most people, that right now is this much of the time. Where's your happiness? Where's your joy? Where's your success? Where's your passion? Where's your creativity? It comes from now. Where's your pain? Where's your discomfort? Where's your fear? It comes from the past and future. So is it absurd or what that we're spending the multitude of time in our thinking, engaging in activities, thought activity, that's causing us pain?
Yeah.
It's insane, really.
It is, really. Yeah.
I think it would be good today for us to come up with a new word. Okay. If we look at people's stuff, looking, you know, at the past, you know, it's kind of called hindsight. We have that word. If we're looking at the future, we have a word called foresight.
Yeah.
Let's you and I choose to make a word called nowsight. And let's you and I decide that we're going to have more nowsight from here on in. That's where we get happy. That's where we get healed. That's healed, meaning our peace of mind.
Yeah.
If I say to you, I want to help you heal, I want you to hear that I'm saying, I'm going to help you have peace of mind. I'm not saying necessarily, I'm going to help your body be better. I'm going to make you 12 years younger. I'm going to, whatever. Those things may or may not happen. But frankly, and I know this sounds kind of not what most psychologists would say, mm-hmm. I'm no longer very concerned with symptom removal.
Yeah.
I'm concerned with removal of the blocks so we can experience love, just as you so well put a little bit ago. And we do that with nowsight.
Nowsight. Well, you know, it's very interesting to me because you're bringing up the past and you're bringing up the future, and they're both imposters. They have nothing to do with our real self. And yet, wherever our attention will go, our energy will go. Hence, very little will be available for the nowsight. So
exactly.
It is a commitment. It is a conscious decision. What do I want? What do I, choosing moment to moment. And I have to say, I'm such an experimentalist. I like to experience things. I live for the joy of trying things. And you're talking to me and I'm saying, you know, I made myself a few notes to ask you about things and so on. And there's a part of my mind that is saying, maybe you should open that screen. Maybe you should take a look at it. And the other one that is saying, why would I do that? I'm having such a ball with Lee just by looking at him and being present and letting my attention and energy stay right there with him and making myself available for what is to come to unfold naturally. So let me take a leap of faith. So there I am. So that's exactly what I've been doing. Given up on my questions that I've had for you.
Well, it's beautiful because what greater joy than to be present with somebody?
Yeah.
Just present with somebody.
Lee, absolutely. This could be...
You want to give your kids a gift? Why I knew you know, you started by saying what I saw or heard with my heart when you were talking to your daughter. Presence. You were willing during a meeting with a colleague to stop and be shift gears and be completely present for somebody who you love deeply, your daughter. That told me everything I needed to know. What I mean by everything I needed to know is you were willing to be present on a dime. Drop it and move on. Okay. Not all of us are able to do that just yet. Well, we got to finish this job or this thing, or what would this person think, or all of that type of stuff. And yet, our most powerful moments are when we do just that.
You want to know something, Lee? Two things I want to tell you. Number one, I just realized something. The happiest moments of my life have been those when whoever was in my presence looked at me and meant it for me and them to be there. Those were the happiest moments. Stop me in my track. Call so off.
I'm going to interrupt you for a second.
Yeah.
So think of that message and communicate it. I want to let it sink in for the listeners today. What you said was very, 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 very powerful. Say it again.
The most happiest moments of my life have been those, just like the moment that I'm having right now with you. When you're saying, stay, don't flicker, don't flicker, don't go, stay, be present. And the moment you do that, I can't help it, Lee, my heart opens completely and love flows right in. There is no lack in that moment. I'm filled with love and I'm happy as I can be. Totally, utterly, completely happy. There's nothing that I lack.
So beautifully put. And I just want to underline for people who are listening who may be having a challenge with health or a loved one who has health issues or similar things. What you're describing can happen at any time, in any condition, with any person. There's nothing in the world in terms of time, pain, condition, social status, crisis, where we can't do exactly what you're saying. And that is the gift.
You're absolutely right. I will go one step further with this. Throughout my life, I've been told by my partners, my daughter, my close friends, that I talk to everybody. I could be on the street right now. If you and I were taking a stroll down the street and a person was approaching us, passing us by on the street, I would stop and talk to them. I would say something. I would do whatever, and I would do it naturally. And it just dawned upon me why, Lee, I wanted to connect. I wanted to be in the present moment. I wanted to have this bliss that we're talking about right now. I've been doing this all my life, and I never knew why. It's incredible. This is why. This is why I found myself in every one of them. That was the holiest, most precious moment. I was bumping into myself. And sometimes I was there. And when I was, and the other person responded, and we were both in the present moment, hallelujah.
Absolutely.
You know, this, think about it, Lee. What a joy this is. We get to, who cares about a list of questions that I made? There you are in front of me. Lee, this might be the last time we see each other. This might be the last time that we talk to one another. I mean, you never know. I could cross the street tomorrow, a truck hits me, and it's over. Or at least it's over as far as the body is concerned. But what a precious, holy moment. What a gift.
It's beautiful.
This is beautiful.
Giving our gift in our good times and our bad times, very, very important. You know, lots of times we think that we only can afford that when things are going okay.
Yeah.
Did you remember years ago the movie The Titanic? Did you see that movie by any chance?
Yes, so, I did.
I'll describe that one scene that was very moving to me. So the ship, we all know what happens. I'm not, you know, the ship's going down, right? Mm-hmm. And you see the inevitability is setting in for everybody. And it's really starting to go. And you see some people throwing themselves over the edge. You see some grown strong men cutting in front of women and children to get on lifeboat. You see all of this frantic chaos going on when people are faced with their impending doom. And then the camera pans over to the musicians that were, before the boat started going down, were playing their music for people to enjoy. And they look at each other, they pause, and they pick up their instruments and they begin to play. And the moment that they were faced with knowing that they were going to die, they chose to give.
Yeah.
They gave their gift in a very profound way through presence.
Yeah.
And presence is the means in the ground in which we can give our gifts. Very difficult to give our gifts when we're split into the past and the future all the time.
Yeah.
So I try and remind myself of that on a daily basis, that just as you said, this could be the last time that we meet. We never know. And why? To me, freedom is walking through life with nothing left unforgiven, unsaid.
Yeah.
I feel free in my life because of that.
Yes, I found myself even today, I found myself lately over the past 20 years, I'd say, and now I'll be 53 this year, making a conscious decision. If I felt something precious, if I had a realization, if I felt gratitude towards someone that was kind to me when they didn't have to be, or that was generous towards me and they didn't have to be, to go to them and say and express it. And a lot of the times I would even apologize and say, I know I'm not doing the best I can. I wish you could see just how grateful, deeply grateful I am. But I made a conscious decision to let it out. So I have no regrets. If tomorrow I'm being put down by a truck, I'll die happy. I have no regrets. I have no regrets. Yeah. Wow. Well, isn't this interesting? This is the purpose for leaving, to be able to be present, to recognize yourself in everything that is, to realize you are looking upon yourself. You're everywhere.
I have a little thing that's above my computer screen, and it says, it's a quote from the text in A Course in Miracles, and it says very much what you just said. It says, teach no one that he is what you would not want to be. Your brother is the mirror in which you see the image of your...
You know, the Course says to say many of the words that it says means nothing. To mean it means everything. I feel that more and more now. And maybe we didn't cover all the things that I meant to ask you about your book, and the many things that you expressed in your life so beautifully in your books. But Lee, we were able to demonstrate and stay in the present moment and see each other for who we are. We live for that. That's there's healing. Where there's, you know, I went to New Zealand, and in Dunedin, south of New Zealand, there was a saying on one of the universities there that said, where there is love, so there is healing. I would say where there's true vision, where you see yourself in everything and you realize there is nothing except holiness, where you see the other person's interest as yourself, as your own. Now that's where there's healing. That's where there's true
healing. What I really love about you and your work and how you speak is you process on a spiritual level in the moment when you're talking. And that's a great gift to do juices as you're doing right now. And going to a place where, well, I'll give you an example. Several years ago, I've been a student of A Course in Miracles since the late 1970s. And the somewhere in the line, maybe 15 years ago, my guidance was to stop practicing the Course for 1 year directly. I mean, not reading it. And actually not read any other spiritual material. And my guidance was to find a teacher someplace every day, different teacher someplace every day. That could be something in nature. It could be somebody at the bus stop. It could be my kid. It could be whoever.
Yeah.
And what I found was that when I approached life and people and my environment in that way, everything became, just as you were saying, you love to experiment and see, everybody became a rich teacher. And the, you know, really looking at and listening to what the lesson for me in that day happened to be, what aspect of love it might be. And I haven't ever published that book, but I did a journal with that for 365 days, and I call it Unexpected Teachers. And it was every day writing that lesson down. And it was really quite a beautiful experience of, you know, finding those lessons.
Yeah, we're surrounded by teachers every day. In everything, all the interactions that we have. That's quite
every physical challenge that I've had, and there have been quite a few in terms of my health challenge. Yeah. Every health challenge that I've had, I've learned a tremendous amount from. And you said today that you could rewind my life to where I never had any of those. I wouldn't trade one for anything. Because it really is the fodder for my growth.
Are you still practicing the Course on a daily basis?
Yes.
Yeah, so am I. Today I'm on I Could See Peace on instead of this. I'm part
of that's a perfect one.
I Could See Peace instead of this.
Yeah.
I love reading the Course. And I love, it's music to my ears. Nothing else cuts it from me. There's just so much in it. I'm so funny. I read from the Course and I say to myself, gee, God, I wish I could can I just be alive enough? Or just, you know, when you're enjoying a piece of cake, can I just finish this piece of cake? Can I just finish it? I'm getting so much out of it. I'm just saying, just give me a few more years until I really savor it, because it's so sweet. Yeah, truth is sweet, isn't it? It's beautiful. It's loving. How can it not be? Albert Einstein said, truth equals beauty equals love. He was right.
he was right.
Oh, well, my friend, I think we should stop our conversation today here. There's a lot for us to talk about. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you for your beautiful soul. I very much appreciate it and enjoy talking to you every time.
The same here. And I'm so grateful for Judy for putting us in touch with one another. This is so Judy-like. She brings those amazing spirits in my life, and I'm just so forever grateful. But I'm not going to let you go before you promise me we're going to do a second one. We have lots to talk about. It's just that I never anticipated we'll have such a rich and wonderful experience in exchange.
I'm happy to talk to you anytime. You're such a beautiful soul. I really enjoy your energy and your wisdom.
Likewise. Thank you for letting me learn from you. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. Thank you, my friend.
Likewise, thank you.
Dr. Lee Jampolsky is the founder of Inspirational Psychology, a way to live, learn, and practice love. Free courses, video, and information on inspirational psychology can be found on www.drleejampolsky.com.